I'm sitting in a very comfortable sunlit sitting room at the back of Highclere Castle to share with you a few stories from behind the scenes at the real Downton Abbey. And my guest today is a wonderful friend of both my husband and myself, Richard Hannon, I suppose Richard Hannon Jr., given I first met his father. So, Richard, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me.
Funny enough, my first recollections are not of you, but of your father, because my father-in-law was a long-standing friend and the racing manager for the late Queen. They were both actually very good riders, but they also shared a passion for racehorses. They both knew so much about it. My father-in-law was known often as Porchy. His title at the time was Lord Porchester.
Yeah.
And he only became Lord Carnarvon when his father died in 1987. So for much of his life, he was called Porchy by the Queen or friends or other people like that. It was, I think, time out for both of them from busy working lives. They'd set off from Highclere and wiggle through all the back roads to arrive at your father's racing stables.
Yeah.
And at that time, I'm not sure how many horses was he training at the time? How big was it?
I think Dad at the time would have trained about 110 or something like that. But I remember those days so well. Dad always used to refer to the previous Lord Carnarvon as Porchy. And I always used to wonder why. I always knew him as Lord Carnarvon. And he used to come up on his own to start with. And my dad used to think he was amazingly lucky, because he used to buy some cheap horses and they turn out, you know, like motorbikes, really, really quick. The old Lord Carnarvon actually is responsible for the relationship with my dad and the late Queen, because he was having a lot of luck at the time in the yard. And I think he probably convinced Her Majesty to have one or two with us. And that's how the whole thing was born. So obviously my father's very, very grateful for that. And that's where it all started. He trained for the old Lord Carnarvon.
Yes.
And now, obviously, I train for yourself and the Lord Carnarvon. So it's kind of been passed on and it's been great.
It's lovely because you also tease my husband and take the mickey a lot out of him, which gives us all such pleasure.
Yeah, when he comes up, he's always he always comes in, we'd like a cup of tea, he says no, so I just get him one anyway. And then as soon as we get out and see the fillies that he's bred, or you guys have bred here, you know, he's in the zone and he loves it, perfectly relaxed.
He really does enjoy it. But funnily enough, some of my first memories were when the late Queen used to come and stay with my parents-in-law, the 7th Earl of Carnarvon, Lord Carnarvon. We'd often have supper with them the night before, and then the following morning, my father-in-law and Her Majesty the Queen would set off to go and visit you, and they'd always be driving through the back roads.
Yeah.
I suppose, deep in conversation before they arrived with yourselves, with your father and yourself.
It was really good. The old Lord Carnarvon, he actually got my dad the horses from Her Majesty, and it was such a massive thing at the time. And I remember my dad always said to me that he said his father would have been so proud. But you think she used to turn up at our yard and drive through the village from between the two yards. And I remember one day there was one man putting a thatch on a roof, and there was a man stood there with a pole saying stop or go. And he put the stop sign out in front of my dad and the Jeep, obviously. And he looks in there and I see him shake his head and look again and wipe his eyes. And he looked up to the guy who nearly fell off the thatch and said, it's the Queen in there. And she just, good morning, nodded and past we went. She always used to come and talk to the lads in the yard. And that was really special, you know, because when she came down with Lord Carnarvon, she was so into it, as was he. And he probably had more horses with us at the time than she did. But she would, you know, they would wander off in different directions and talk to the lads and see the horses. And it was really great to see. And something that, as a family, we're all extremely proud, you know, to have been part of it.
It was real time out, wasn't it, I think, for Her Majesty. And my father-in-law obviously adored it. It was his world. And it is definitely in the genes, because my husband just loves it. He loves the breeding. He loves the racing. He's, I'm sure, always interested in being on the phone, talking to Kevin, discussing what races.
I remember so many times being at the races with Lord Carnarvon and...
Which, the late one or my
current
one?
No, the present one, Geordie, your husband. And I think she won. I saw him afterwards walk into the winner's enclosure, and I remember looking at him and going, Geordie, I don't know why you do this, because to me, you look like you're having the worst time on earth. And he just turned and said, don't worry, Richard, inside I'm buzzing. And he really was. But it's that one thing that kind of gets people. And I think you either get that feeling from a racehorse or you don't. And he definitely does. And I don't think it's something you can teach someone. I think they either feel it or they don't. And he definitely does.
He definitely feels it. And I know that if he's stressed, I'll sort of hand him the stallion book to contemplate for another year.
He
instantly starts relaxing.
He's got all that. He's got a list of races. And, you know, with that book, he can become a real pain in the arse. But he's my pain in the arse. So I'm all right. And he does my job for me, because quite often he picks his races out and he's bloody right. And I've told him on a couple of occasions, and I wonder what book he's going to get next. But, you know, don't forget, the horses that you're both racing, they're homegrown. They've been here since their inception and part of the place and, you know, sort of homemade. So there's an extra dimension or a feeling of achievement, you know, when they do well.
I think it is, Richard, and I've loved it. And now I actually feel confident enough that they're born here, which to start with, we'd sent them to the National Stud. I didn't have enough confidence, but they're now born here. We've got proper, you know, equi-fencing around the paddock.
Yeah,
so I feel
great.
Really comfortable that we can really do a good job with them. And we've got a really good balance of food. And I've learned a lot from having grown up with more Arab horses to these thoroughbreds, which are a different breed. And if they can put their foot down a hole or run into
happens,
a fence, they
if
always
If they can't
do.
Be happy... Happy horses, they won't be happy anywhere. And, you know, that's, you know, they live in a most beautiful place and they seem to do very well here, which is great. Long may it last. Keep the good horses coming, because I need them.
Oh, good. Well, we've got some lovely, huge fields around the castle, which is where they're turned out into, with this undulating ground, which I always think helps them learn to balance.
Ground is very important to young horses as they grow. And, you know, just seeing open space, they get used to it. You know, that's effectively their natural habitat. And then when they come into training, they're in one stable, but they still have to walk around the massive fields. And if they've seen them as a young horse, invariably, they don't get, you know, very excited and start sweating when they do see these open spaces. So it kind of gets them ready for the big bad world.
And I think they use themselves better, Richard, as they go up and down. And the three foals we've got, hopefully coming to in another year, who I'm very particularly excited about, because I think the experience I've had of from birth to looking after them to sending them off to you, just my experience has grown exponentially. They're three really nice foals, and I feel that I can't deliver any better foals with a chance of winning to you than we've got now, if you like, which is what I'm really interested in the food and the balance of what they eat.
The oats they're fed on when they come into training are Highclere Castle oats. Every time we have a winner, there's an advert in there. It says, fed on Highclere Castle oats.
It's all on the Racing Post. And every time
every
you win,
time.
We have to pay up.
Yeah. So. And we had a group one winner in France at the end of the year on Arc de Triomphe Day, a horse
Amazing.
Called Rosalian. So obviously he's fed on Highclere Castle oats and he's second favourite for the guineas. So
wow.
They might have a real reason to put up a plaque in the field or something. You never know.
How exciting. I'm really into, because I think, you know, obviously they're, rather than feed horses on processed, condensed nuts, which I'm afraid I'm not very keen on, because their guts spend such a lot of time trying to, you know, dissolve them. I think it's a very poor use of their digestive system. The way you feed your horses, I think, gives them the best chance of...
Feed is the most important thing.
Of their guts. I think Napoleon said his army marches on his stomach, and as far as I'm concerned...
That's exactly right. And the oats horses... we get from here, we mix our own feed. But effectively, the raw materials, we add molasses, cider vinegar, bit of Guinness, honey, cod liver oil, all into our own mix. But effectively, the raw materials, like the oats from Highclere Castle, are the most important ingredient, you know, to keep them happy, their coats, everything. If they've had them from the day one, then they have a bit of an advantage.
Well, I think they look pretty good. And we've now got Pink Lily, who's come back here, who has given my husband such pleasure, although you might always not know it, but she has. Actually, she's in the stables just behind the castle. So Geordie and I do our night rounds. She's there with her.
She's really sweet.
Mother Mary.
And she deserves a rest. She's had, I think she had about 9 races last year. The last one was in, I think, the middle of January. I do not want to go racing that time of year, but because Lord Carnarvon was going, I kind of had to. So when I met him, I had to laugh. I said, what are we doing here? And I was going to on holiday to Barbados about a week later. So I was kind of in good spirits. And she ran very well and finished second. I think somebody forgot to tell Lord Carnarvon that we'd finished second and not won, because he's very excited. And it poured with rain literally from the time we left the race course for about 3 days. But, you know, that was another exciting, good day. And it just shows you a good horse will bring somebody something that money can't buy. And I think you guys, having bred these horses as they come through, they bring you something a little bit special. And I think that says a lot for racing and then a lot for breeding your own horses. And all of it good.
I think racing is such a huge British industry, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like other industries, it's beset by challenges from every side, in terms of funding, from finding the staff to work in the stables,
yeah,
from
hard.
Encouraging young jockeys to come through.
Yeah.
I've got some friends in an old gold syndicate where everybody owns a little bit of a hair of a horse.
Yeah.
I think in some ways those are wonderful because they get so many people involved.
Exactly.
They had a winner recently. Smiles, my girlfriend, had a winner recently. She was so excited.
Yeah.
It was just
even
marvelous.
If you have that tiniest piece. You know, in Australia that works very well. You don't have to have a champion to get something, an awful lot out of a horse. And these syndicates, they slightly give people a way of just dipping their toe in the water without huge expense. And it gets some people and it gets them in for the long term. You know, they might well end up owning a Breeders' Cup winner or a Woodbine International winner.
But you're right, and there are amazing films, both in America and in this country, about, you know, a horse that was kept
Sea
in a backyard. Exactly.
Great film, that.
Oh, it's just wonderful.
National Velvet.
National Velvet, that
then
was
We've got the Grand National coming up in April. That's always a huge occasion. And I didn't go to the Breeders' Cup this year. I didn't have a runner, but I do enjoy it when we go out there.
It would be very nice if we did. It'd be lovely for Geordie to go back to his American roots.
Yeah.
And
LA.
Have a runner in that. It'd be enormous.
Lovely
fun,
track there. Santa Anita's amazing track.
The thing about horses is you start off with this little foal being born and you look after it for years and send it on to you. And you have to travel in hope, don't you?
Yeah, well,
it makes
that's what
you always look forward to something.
Yeah, a lot of friends are born out of this trade and good horses make good relationships. It's not always easy and it can be very disappointing, but without the bad days, there would be no great days. And you have to kind of hold on to the fact that if you have a few bad days, your great days come in, and be optimistic.
I also think for many people, the joy, particularly in some of the huge syndicates where you own a hare, is going to the stable such as yourself and seeing the horses, you know, work and, you know, bumping round in that car
that
with you.
That picked up a lot, Fiona, during COVID, when a lot of people, they couldn't do anything else. I think they were allowed to come and see livestock or something. And they actually came down to appreciate the animal, to see it training, and see it for the beauty that it actually contains, or, you know, portrays as well. When you see it moving, we drive next to them in our Jeep and you don't get the disappointment of not winning a race, but you just get to see them in their natural environment. And that took off a lot during COVID. And we always welcome people down to the yard. We don't have quite as many people down to the yard as you do here. There was two races sponsored by Highclere Castle at Salisbury this year. Do you know that? Well, of course you do, because you sponsored them. And we won both of them. And we got two bottles of Highclere gin. And my dad has emptied,
drunk them both.
Emptied the lot. He said, you better ring that Lord Carnarvon and tell him that we want a couple more bottles up here. I said, no, Dad, you can get them pretty much anywhere now. Apparently Waitrose. Well, I ain't going there to get them. I said, well, just tell Mum, she'll go and get them. So we have some. But if you've got any more going, you just send them on.
That was amazing. I mean, I have to say, because half the team from Highclere were watching the race at Salisbury, sponsored by Highclere Castle Gin and won by Lord Carnarvon. It was such
on
a
Highclere
happy moment.
Castle Oats, if you don't mind.
Which are also in the gin.
Aren't they in the gin?
Did you not know that?
Well, I do now.
Well, you do now. So the gin, it took about 4 years to make it. In fact, we probably should have asked your father to come and help us do the taste test.
Yes.
We tested for 9 months, drinking little samples, sending it back.
But it's flying everywhere. It won all these awards, hasn't it?
It has. It's won 150 awards. It hasn't won as many awards as you've had winners yet, but we'll try and get that. But no, we did. So we kept on testing it. And then at the end, it had a slight taste at the end It's a very smooth gin now. So Geordie and the distillers put just a few Highclere Castle oats, which has smoothed it out, which is why your father adores it so much.
So what, you get a bit of a nice aftertaste?
It's a smooth taste at the end, so it's fantastic in martinis and things.
It's a nice bottle it comes in too. I thought it was very fancy. I can see that anywhere. I know. And I told him they didn't have it at Newbury Racecourse, I think about 2 years ago.
Now it's everywhere. Oh, good.
It's on every shelf.
Yes, so it's the same oats that help your horses win.
Exactly.
That will help us drink well.
Yeah, so and it helps Richard Hannon Sr. survive with his bottles of gin.
I do remember before I met either my husband or my power-in-law, a wonderful little mare that your father trained called Lyric Fantasy. Yeah. And I remember watching her race on television. She was extraordinary, a little more than a pony, I remember.
Yeah, she was called the Pocket Rocket. And I remember so well where I was when she won the Queen Mary at Royal Ascot 8 lengths. Believe it or not, I was in the tuck shop with a girl I fancied at the time, watching this race. She had a TV in the corner at school. And I think it was just nearly the end of exam season. And I had no idea really how good she was. And my dad always said, the old Lord Carnarvon, if he had a plan for a filly, he wouldn't care if Frankel was going to the same race. It wouldn't change him. He would still maintain his course of where he wanted to go. And I think she won first time at Windsor. Then she won the National Stakes at Sandown. She won the Super Sprint, which is a great race invented by the old Lord Carnarvon and my dad for horses that cost less than 40,000. It's a great idea and still going to this day. And then at the end of her two-year-old career, she beat all the older horses. So she's a two-year-old. She beat the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-year-olds, even a horse from America. It was unheard of to come over at that time, really. There was a horse called the Refrigerator, came over from America to run in the Nunthorpe. And I think he was about 17 hands. I mean, he was enormous, almost like a dinosaur. And you had this little thing, Lyric Fantasy, who I don't think would have come up probably to his shoulder, and she went.
So was she about 15 hands?
Less.
14.3.
I'm certain she would have nearly passed for pony racing if you took her shoes off, probably. The fastest thing I've ever seen. I remember her so well, and my dad used to say she just used to train herself, and as you can imagine, the old Lord Carnarvon, when he had her in training, he was up quite a bit. And we used to joke about him. We used to call him Man in Brown Suit, because he always had that brown suit with his yellow Hermes tie with a saddle on. And I ended up getting one for my 18th birthday, I remember. But they were great days, and effectively made my father's relationship with Lord Carnarvon's father. And so a relationship with the Queen, that's where it all started. And we owe Lyric Fantasy an awful lot. And a filly called Niche.
Yes.
And Lemon Soufflé. She won the Moy Glare, I think. He had some very good fillies, and they all cost next to nothing for Lord Carnarvon.
Or he bred them here.
Yeah,
because he would obviously breed them here and then sell the colts and keep the fillies normally.
Never, he would never sell his blood. And then he always used to come and have all bran, and he would slice the banana himself. I used to sit there watching. I would have been about, I don't know, 10 or 11. I remember it so well. It's weird. Only time I probably saw my dad behave for the whole 3 hours that this man was there. No swearing. Everybody polite. Everybody.
Well, with the Queen or just even on his own?
No, with Lord Carnarvon.
Oh, right.
And then later on the Queen came, and then... They were very nerve-wracking to start with, the early days when the Queen used to come, but then we kind of all got used to it, and it became really fun, and she used to come into the house and have a cup of coffee, and then she was good enough, she had horses with me as soon as I took over from my father. I remember one day she was leaving. She said, "Goodbye, Richard, thank you very much. Horses look great." I said, "So pleased that you think they look well, ma'am. Thank you for coming." And her car pulled up outside of my front door. And I said, "By the way, ma'am, I love your new Range Rover. I love the colour of it." I said it, and it was green. I said, "It's British racing green, you know, and it belongs to Range Rover." She didn't say anything. She got in the car, chauffeur shut the door, and then got in the car, went to move forward. And I think Her Majesty obviously said, "Just stop a minute, please." Wound the window down. She looked at me. She said, "Richard, this is Edinburgh green, and it belongs to me." And that was me told. I said, "Right you are, ma'am. Right you are." I got that wrong. Anyway, so it wasn't British Racing Green. It was Edinburgh Green. And that colour belonged to her exclusively. So if I learnt nothing other than that, I'll never forget that. Some great days. When she left, it was almost like it was a question of just rip your tie off, go back in, talk about what happened, what we discussed. And that was always such fun. And, it's a real buzz. The Queen's just been here. She sat in our drawing room, in that chair, had a cup of coffee, and just talking normally. And
just talking horses, and she knew so much about the horses. So, like my power-in-law, and actually my husband, it's all about that. What's really fun, what was deliberate on my husband's part, was we've got a very nice filly going to you called Kaya, who's just been broken in.
K-A-I-Y-A, isn't it?
Something like that, I'm not quite sure. But she was born on St. Valentine's Day, so her stable name was Val, Valentine. But that was taken, so we couldn't name her that.
Okay.
So Geordie went for Kaya, which I think means peace, which she felt was a useful word to share with the world. She's slightly more backward than the other chestnut coming to you. But she looks like a lovely filly racehorse. But she's by study of man, by deep impact. And that then goes back to Berkeley and Highclere and Geordie's father and the Queen
started,
and where it all started.
Yeah. Height of fashion.
Really nice. Yes.
That's what all of it, absolutely amazing family.
So it's quite fun. And then, curiously enough, my number two sister was going on business to Japan. She's in the banking world. And over there, Deep Impact, the grandfather of our filly, is held in deep reverence, quite rightly.
He's a legend over there.
So my sister Sarah, who learnt to ride with me, but prefers to stay well away from horses, came down here for a lesson in breeding.
Did you used to ride in hunting?
Oh, yes, no, I did, yes.
I did.
But she then went back to Japan. She was very good on the pedigree.
Can she speak Japanese?
No, this was much easier.
So no one to tell.
And then I've written about the origins of racing here with the 5th Earl of Carnarvon. So my husband's great-grandfather and the stud and things like that. So I'd given her this book to pass on to her friends in Japan with her new knowledge of the pedigree of Deep Impact.
So there's always been horses here at Highclere Castle, is that correct?
So the 5th Earl of Carnarvon, who was the one who discovered Tutankhamun, his grandfather was the Earl of Chesterfield, who was mad about horses in Victorian times.
Okay.
And he actually basically spent so much money on bloodstock, he more or less went bankrupt. And he had to retire back to his house.
He could have wasted it, though.
Bretby. Yes, instead of which he didn't. He, meanwhile, although he retired, he built himself a 2-mile gallop so he could train and at home, basically.
Okay.
And his grandson, the 5th Earl, definitely had the bug.
Yeah.
And he had the passion. He continued with the stud at Bretby, which was the house in Derbyshire, which he inherited.
Yeah.
And then he created one in a sheepdell here, which my sister-in-law, Carolyn, now runs. But we've then carried on the tradition of breeding and by the Earls of Carnarvon around the castle. So we use the old castle stables, which is
so it's amazing. A long-term tradition then. That's great. I can only remember back to my grandfather.
Robert Le Diable, he had a horse called the Solicitor Franklin. He came 4th in the Derby with Valens.
Yes.
In 1909, I want to say. And he had quite a good horse in 1922, just before he discovered the tomb of Tutankhamun. He sadly died 6 months later. But again, he was talking about his horses to the end.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law, who died far too young and quickly, was nevertheless in the weekend just before he sadly died. We were up having supper with him and he was again talking horses.
Yeah, I remember he always looked great, always very healthy looking. I remember that day, that was a sad day. But I do think nowadays we might see a bit more of these kind of old English kind of families with a tradition of racehorses. We might see those, you know, those sort of institutions getting bigger because a lot of the Arabs are kind of winding down to a point. And now there's an opportunity to buy these blue chip mares of your dreams that probably you couldn't do 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And now I think hopefully we might see a lot more of the people that have had horses throughout their families over time getting more involved.
It's a lovely way to do it. And obviously, from our point of view, it's segued into all the other businesses we have here at Highclere. Yeah. But I also feel that if we're producing the best oats in the world for the best trainer in the world, that's me, you, Richard.
Yes, right.
We also need to breed the horses and put them into training with you. You know, we need to follow on with that. So that is kind of Geordie's ethos.
And it can run alongside Downton Abbey, which kind of generates some nice income, and you get to
Well, the tourists too. Downton think it's very good marketing.
Okay, so the tourists come in the coach loads.
We can still have only the same number of people through the front door of this castle before or after Downton. The door's the same size, the room's the same size.
Are you sometimes amazed with the success and the notoriety that it has developed. Everywhere you go, they say there's three things the same in the world wherever you go: Coca-Cola, McDonald's and Manchester United. And I think Downton Abbey, you're nearly getting to the fourth.
I
hear about it everywhere. I think it's only 20 minutes away from me, or even though it takes you half an hour, I must drive too fast. it's not far away, and it's everywhere. You know, films, is it Netflix?
Perhaps bouncing out of the real stories, Julian Fellowes wrote King George V and Queen Mary into part of the Downton Abbey film, which was such a successful film in 2019, which was quite amusing. Yeah. I'm not quite sure what his thoughts or creativity were there, but I think that amused everybody with... Yeah. I think the stress with which you've alluded to before the arrival to stay, or I think they had lunch in the film's case with the royal family, which was quite something. With the sad death of the Queen, we've obviously now King Charles and Queen Camilla have taken up the reins.
Yeah.
And I don't think a couple have ever worked so hard. They have been absolutely everywhere.
King Charles is doing a fantastic job, and it's nearly impossible you're taking over from one of the most loved monarchs of all time. And then when it comes to racing, we owe so much to the late Queen. You know, she did so much for racing, and I think royal families from all over the world only came in to British racing to kind of be near her or be interested in one of her ultimate, her most passionate pastime in her life. And now she's not here. It leaves a real gap. She was there every day for Royal Ascot, you know, and
but
King
so
Charles is continuing.
And, yeah,
yeah,
was
he
amazing.
Was there every day for Royal Ascot, yeah. And he had a winner. And I think I'm a pretty good judge of people. He loved it, and it meant something to him. And you can see, you know, he felt it. And that was such a good thing for the sport. I was there looking at the whole thing unfolding, you know, you watch people. People were ecstatic for him. You know, the crowd all came from the front of the stand right to the back. I haven't seen that since Frankel won. Everyone in the industry was like, this man is into it now. You know, he'll surely have the bug. And he has, and he deserves it. It's not going to be easy for him because she knew so much and gave so much. But he's doing a really good job and supporting British racing. And we need him.
I think they are an amazing couple. It cannot be easy stepping into anyone's shoes. You've stepped into your father's shoes.
And Geordie, the present Lord Carnarvon, took over from his father. Yes. I took over from my father. Believe it, my father took over from his father. And you think it's given to you. Nothing's given to you. In fact, you have to work harder because you have to try and be... Well, this is the thing. Don't try and be the man that the previous person was. Be your own man. But, you know, have aspects of your predecessors. And that's not easy. You have a mountain to climb from the very start. And, you know, you have to do your job and get on with it. But it's not easy. But, you know, I'm very lucky. I can't sit here and say I started training with nothing. I started with a massive yard and a lot of advantages. And let's keep it going. And now the Highclere Castle is going as good as ever.
Well, no, thank you. And I think, again, for the King Charles and Queen Camilla, they took over when their extraordinary predecessor had climbed continually up the stairs to build her reign to the top. And you're obviously not starting at that position. You're starting again to build up. But I think everyone has applauded all that they've done.
Yeah,
and begun to found their own way forwards as well.
And I think the monarchy is as popular as ever. Certainly is in racing. And it seems that all around the world, you know, he's doing an extremely good job of an impossible job.
And in a very challenging time. So I do hope going racing and enjoying the horses, these extraordinary animals with their gorgeous glossy coats, which
in the middle of summer,
heavenly when
everybody thinks it's all about Royal Ascot, but there are so many other meetings that are so important to the whole business. And, you know, sometimes Salisbury races, little fish are sweet. And, you know, it makes somebody's day, week, month, if they have a winner. And... you know, long may that last. And King Charles, hopefully he'll get another big winner pretty soon. And I hope Lord and Lady Carnarvon do. More than that, I hope I do.
I hope you do.
I hope it's one of yours.
And I hope we're paying more money to the Racing Post for Highclere Castle.
Keep those oats coming. And I'll take my two bottles of gin today, please.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Richard.
You're so welcome. Nice to be here.
Thank you for listening to this edition. There are more podcasts from life at the real Downton Abbey on my podcast page at ladycanarvon.com. And please don't forget to subscribe so you automatically receive the next episode